with the paperwork, so you can have a good slash motion, and give a contribution yourself and to do for this question.
Robert White, and I'm a committee member who is responsible for the stage through this planning process. This is Sharon Walfew, who's the chairman.
Could you repeat that, sorry?
Chairperson, this is Sharon.
Your name, sorry?
Sharon Walfew. Yeah, didn't mean much more than that.
By the way, just like before, it's just for general use, it's being recorded on the way in front, so you don't have to ask the board.
Well, so everyone else can hear. Yes, so the people behind can hear.
Just a, maybe, let's say that.
And your third member?
My name's Laura Solbeck, and I'm on the association as well.
And Mr. White, you've given us a, would you like to read this or present this? We haven't said it, so obviously, go ahead again.
I'd like to read it. It's longer than 2 pages, but given the volume of stuff that I'm trying to address, I seek...
We've accepted modest excursions, and this is in that category, just like you also had. The concern is more about people who have 10-minute slots who rock in with 15 pages of text and who basically blow our timetable and inconvenience other people, not so much inconveniencing us, it's the people who are waiting with pre-scheduled slots, but you're not in that category, we've got time to hear from you, so why don't you proceed?
So, I gather that you've heard from Orson just this morning. There are several parts to my submission, so I'll just talk about them for a start. In regard to Courts Development's proposals for rezoning and changes to the rules in the visitor accommodation zone, we hold significant concerns that such a prominent site could have its development potential increased in such a significant way without the ability for the community to have at least some input into what is proposed. We support Ms. Bowby's evidence in regard to rejecting changes to the rules of the VA zone. We could be open to rezoning of the whole site if that is what is proposed on its own, but the cumulative nature of the rezoning combined with the changes to the VA rules proposed by Courts Developments could lead to the site absolutely dominating the entrance to the township, and we believe it would be a far better address through a normal consent process where Courts Developments have clearly set out what exactly they are proposing before the rules are changed specifically for the site. We are opposed to an informal report for this location. Would you like to stop there? Or
well, I think that the why don't you carry on to the end and we'll pick up the wall issues.
So the settlement zone carryover zone rules. Our proposals for the rules we would like to be carried over from the township zone seek to provide for a separate treatment of Harvey Township in at least some way as compared to the other LDR zones in the QLDC. Harvey is a separate township with its own setting, location and community. And proposing a policy that recognises Harvey and the LDR rules, we see that it may have little effect, but our purpose was for it to lead in, for it to be a lead-in, which would allow specific rules that relate to Harvey to be included in this zone. We would like to point out that the rationale for accepting rules in the LDR zone should not solely be whether they are efficient or commonly enforced, as Ms. Bowley states in her Section 42A report, but must also respond to the area they are being applied to and the communities that live in them. The boundary planting rule 4.xi from our submission is one that was unanimously requested by the community to be carried over from the township rules. We submit that a move to the LDR zoning and smaller section sizes, boundary planting will become more of an issue purely from a sunlight perspective, let alone views. that with Smith, this rule has not been burdensome from for the council in the past and doubt it will be in the future, as most neighbours can sort these issues out on their own, and on the rare occasion that this is not the case, the community wishes for the rule to be available to apply. In regard to the rezoning sought by University Development and others, infrastructure and the ability for the area to accommodate this amount of growth are the main issues from our perspective. Not just the resistance to change, as yesterday's submitters would have you believe. Project Pure connection. Firstly, the proposed connection to the Project Pure is far from a done deal. There are at least two significant landowners that I am aware of on the proposed pipeline path that have been subject to what, in their view, may be considered draconian enforcement action by the QLDC. The idea that they will then allow QLDC to put a sewage pipe through their properties at little cost to the QLDC or in a time frame that meets QLDC's needs is fanciful at best. Secondly, I have been informed by a separate party that have land the pipeline is proposed to go through, that it was only recently that council engineers visited the Cane Road Plateau to ascertain the actual path the pipeline will take across this area. They were particularly concerned at the fact that the area was not flat at all and will require multiple pumps and power connections that had not been allowed for in the current modelling or budget all the way across this area. Thirdly, at a recent HCA meeting, one of the committee members listed all the groups and individuals that they were aware of that intended to object to the pipeline crossing the upper Clutha River. There is significant opposition to this proposal. Being that there are large cost and time delay risks involved with the Project Pure connection, as well as the distinct possibility that the rights to convey sewage over certain properties will only be able to be acquired through the Public Works Act and fought by parties with very deep pockets, the Council's latest Three Waters CAPEX program tracker estimated practical completion date of the 17th of January 2022 looks highly doubtful. Roading network. The Lake Harbour roading network is currently being held together by a patchwork of minor improvements and is struggling to keep up with the current demand. Almost all of our roads are too narrow to carry trucks. A glaring example of this is the sealed sections of Gladstone and Domain Road, which are constantly under repair. The seal is far too narrow, and the increasing amount of trucks that use it as a bypass to Wanaka when the Red Bridge is closed for maintenance about every 6 months currently, and every time the West Coast Road is closed, every milk truck and trailer unit that services the southern side of the West Coast comes through our township. The two intersections raised in the hearing so far are in desperate need of upgrading now, let alone with the growth proposed. I have been working with the council on the eastern end of the roundabout, the eastern end of the dam roundabout, to try and come up with a solution. But this is a far more complex issue than simply dumping an overlay onto a satellite picture as was done yesterday by Mr. Carr. The dam intersection has all of the water connections from the township running just underneath the surface of the road. There is very little room to acquire enough land for any required pedestrian access, and the land is owned by Contact Energy. I have spoken to Neil Gillespie of Contact Energy, and he stated that while Contact Energy would be keen to work with the QLDC to find a solution to the roundabout issue, any solution would have to address all of Contact's concerns in regard to the dam, e.g. soil stability, stormwater runoff, etc. This will not be simple. The Cemetery Domain Road intersection will not just be a township intersection. It will be a bypass for large truck traffic. It is currently too small for a truck and trailer unit to turn on while staying in its own lane. The HCA has been trying to get the Domain Road sealed for a long period of time so that a bypass could be put in place down the western side of the township. The But the council has no funding for this, and we struggle to get the gravel road graded, let alone anything else. It's very conceivable that if Universal Developments get the go-ahead with all of what they propose, the intersection will change as proposed so that the turning traffic has right of way, and then not long after have to be changed back to the way it used to be. There are complex issues that need far more thought from both council and the developer than has currently been undertaken. There is still the Capel Avenue Lakeview Terrace intersection that hasn't even been discussed. The fact that the closest quarry for any roading material for the development will add more heavy trucking volumes to Gladstone Road and more drinking water supply. There are currently two aquifers serving the Harbour Basin. One is fully allocated already, and while there is still some capacity left in the second aquifer, I have not heard any discussion as to what would be required for what is proposed and what is available. We only have one reservoir on the far side of the dam, which is a huge earthquake risk to the town. And the Southern District Health Board has recommended a second reservoir to the council, but we have not seen any action on this today. Power is well documented that the area's power infrastructure is in disrepair. As the area's population increases, the HA is receiving more and more complaints about power outages, and the time to undertake repairs seems to be getting longer and longer. Other issues. Our view is that the UGB is just as defendable in its current location as any proposed so far. It was weakened by the fact that Mr. Hocking removed all the trees that lined the southern side of Cemetery Road. Because of COVID-19, we have not been able to get a landscape report completed in time for the hearings, but we did not have trouble finding a landscape architect that was willing to back its current location. Summary. As Mr. Hocking said yesterday, someone's got to pay. And I think this is a central question for the commissioners. How will the affordable properties be made available while still paying for all the upgrades that will be needed to service this sort of growth? The hearings process has already shone light on the fact the council desperately wants to approve the SHA and be seen to be providing lowest cost housing. But in doing so, they run the very high risk that they will not be able to control any further spread of the Harvey Irving environment all over the rural land in the Harvey Basin, even with the BRA and further protections. As I have shown, there is currently a significant infrastructure deficit in the Harvey. The SHA will only add significantly to this, and the whole QLDC needing further investment, Harvey is not high on the list. There is a very real risk that the current township residents end up funding more than their fair share of the infrastructure required for the SHA, and that the large retired population who currently reside in Harvey will not be able to afford the rates increases that will inevitably come about as Harvey is transformed from a city township to the third largest urban area in QLDC if the proposed zoning goes ahead. Tension between the older and younger generations over this issue is significant.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. I just wanted to clarify one point in your paragraph, in your summary, talking about the council wanting to approve the SHA. The information we have is that it already has been approved. It is a resource consent that could be exercised effectively at any point, but there's a time limit on how far away, but there's no time limit on how soon it could be exercised.
I haven't read that
probably. And so that you, by the sound of it, you were sitting listening to the Universal team yesterday, and you've effectively foreshadow exactly what their argument is, which is they have a consent, they will, they'll be exercising it starting in January for the SHA. And so the next question is, will the
this is the stable door issue. The urban growth boundary that's in the proposed plan has already been breached. And so the question is not whether it's moved, but where it's moved to. What's your response to that? That it's a the pass is sold, effectively.
The SHA process was used, I guess, to jump the boundary. And had it not been for that process, I don't believe that this growth would have been allowed to the south of the township. Being that there was this bespoke process used to move south of the township, we think that it would be far more sensible to have a bespoke zoning applied to that area. Another issue that was raised in my discussions with landscape architects was that and the people that I spoke to, in their opinion, the rural residential should be included within the urban growth boundary, and that would provide some of the protections that people have been trying to seek. But I can see why the developers don't want to include large lot areas. But I would suggest that it would provide some of the protections that are needed to limit the growth rather than spalling out over the whole basin.
So when you say the rural residential be included, but included at the current required density, which is, I think, 4,000 square metres.
It's, yes. There's a difficulty in that I'm trying to represent the community, and their position is that the UGB shouldn't move from where it is. But say if I could, in a hypothetical situation, if the boundary moved to the water race, I would suggest that the SHA could stay as it was, but that any additional zoning that was allowed should really be rural residential.
The history of development in the Upper Clutha is replete with examples of people trying to use rural residential zoning as an urban boundary, and development gradually moving up to, and then in the rural residential areas being infilled, and then going past it, like you're going to have to look out towards Mount Iron to see that. Is it really, do you think that is a practicable boundary?
I was just going to say on there, I think the problem is that Hawea as a community can see that Hawea is probably going to need to grow at some point. The problem is at the moment that the infrastructure deficit and the way that Hawea is growing has put quite a big, heavy financial burden on the residents of Hawea. What's currently being discussed in terms of the further development would increase the town size by 60% and increase a bigger problem on the infrastructure around the roads, around the water, around the sewage, all of which have not actually been resolved as a current township. All of them are still actually big issues at the moment, and all of us have seen massive increases in our rates as a result of that. So if you take the Project Pure side of things, the sewage side of things, let's assume that does go ahead under the current plans at the moment, which are suggested to pipe into Project Pure. What happens then if Project Pure needs to move in another 20 years? I mean, 20 years ago, I was negotiating the sale of my property in Hawea, and it was at Proviso 20 years ago that we had to sign up to the new sewage system. So there was a new sewage system back then 20 years ago. Now 20 years later, we're talking about a new sewage system. Are we going to be talking about a new sewage system in another 20 years? And this is what, there's no surety in it for the population. That's just the sewage. Then we've discussed the roads, we've discussed the water. These are big concerns that the hardware community has. So whilst we're talking about plans for 30 years' time and stuff like that, The reports that have been done at Harley Estate have actually indicated there are enough infill and greenfield sites within the current urban growth boundary without taking the special housing area into consideration for that development and growth to happen for the next 30 years. That was pre-COVID. So to now have another special housing area put in, and the suggestion that more infrastructure and more requirements are going to be required to actually to put that in, and we might actually extend the urban growth boundary because there's no actual landscape boundary there. It's just a frustration to the people when we haven't even been listened to with our current concerns. Last week, there was a water blowout. Half the town lost their water. The reason for that blowout was because somebody decided it was a really good idea to drill a hole for putting a post in or a tree or something right into the easement of one of the existing areas. But the reason they did that is because council hasn't protected its infrastructure. Those properties probably don't even realise they're on easements. They should know because they bought it, but council has done nothing to protect the infrastructure that's currently in place for the existing town. And I'm not talking about infrastructure that's 20 years old. I'm talking about infrastructure that's 2 or 3 years old. The only way that was actually fixed when we wanted to actually serve for the Harley Township that evening was for me to allow them to access the leak via my property. If I developed my property any further, they wouldn't have access to that leak, and half of Harley Township would have been out of water for that entire night. So these are issues that we're finding at the moment, let alone talking about extending the urban growth boundary and the infrastructure that would go with that. Around the roads, everything. So Harwea has a little bit of an issue with the fact that, yes, this consent has been tick the box, go ahead, but nobody has yet addressed actually what's going on in Harwea now for the current community, let alone this new proposal for development. And so I guess that's why we're a little bit reticent about wanting the urban growth boundary to keep the urban growth boundary where it is, because we'd like some commitment for you to fix up existing problems that are actually there before we start talking about like sort of how it's going to work on a bigger scale, because we're dealing with it now.
To come back to your question about the rural residential, there are examples in the Harvey Township that were rural residential and have been subdivided to lower, smaller lot sizes. And we recognise that the town's going to grow, but it's a method of slowing the growth so that the council can keep up.
First page of going back to the smaller of the two issues that you put to us. I would say that we actually, I think, we know what's large to be one. You talk about a policy as an entree to civic provisions and the rules for Harwea. I was thumbing through your submission looking for what that policy might say and I couldn't find it. Did I miss it in passing?
Yeah, I had there's a current policy in the township rules.
So that's where it is.
So that 9.1.3 point of the song. Ninth page. That's just a copy and paste from the current township of our original submission.
Hey, so what page on your submission?
Number nine.
Sorry, I was talking about the others. So in other words, I was trying to pass it too fast, I missed it. That's all I need. Any questions for the CA team?
I suppose, again, just in general, again, you heard the discussion yesterday, and you heard we were discussing quite a lot about this document, that the National Policy Statement on Urban Development, which at its first sight, you know, is clearly in trying to encourage further urban intensification. And I'm just taking the point that what you've said is slightly different. So you're not opposing development per se, you're simply saying it needs to be staged in a way that the infrastructure can keep up. So the proposition is, if the infrastructure is resolved and sorted, the scale of development, for example, that Universal was talking about would be acceptable. I mean, you're still talking about, you know, you talk about the water race and beyond that, rural residential. I was reading because it was that last line, the tension between older and younger generations is significant. I don't want to make assumptions about who's saying what, I can assume. But so there's a part of the community that's saying, yes, we want this now because we're learning it makes things more affordable, versus the existing residents who say, you know, raising exactly the issues you are. So hence in that, so it's not a, it's a when, and will you, not a, not an if.
No, well, this is, the other factor is I don't believe that to take one thing, the dam can take that sort of, can Hawea take this sort of growth, and I don't believe.
So that's the point we're discussing yesterday, isn't it? It's really the infrastructure and the load, and you know, there is a question mark, and we're questioning it. Your fair view is that those might be unresolvable or only resolvable with huge amounts of money, which may be incurred.
I think more investigation needs to be done about what the total capacity could be before we go this far.
Right.
And, I mean, the aquifer's another one. You've got farmers. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the two aquifers, but the farmers on the eastern side of the basin are screaming for more water, and they're not, there's no more to give them. There's a separate aquifer, according to the ORC, that has still got space available. But what we do know is that when the lake gets low, the bores in the Hawea Flat stops. So there's a connection between the lake and those, maybe those two aquifers are separate, but they're still connected. And so there's clear issues about how much water is going to be available for growth of 60% more
than
what
you can mention. Thank you, Bob. We take our mandate, as an association, we take our mandate from the community. And so your question, we need to go back to the communities and say, hey, great news, talking about the infrastructure, bringing that up to speed. Once that's done, there's still talking about doing some development. How do you feel about that? So we would take our mandate from there. We wouldn't necessarily impose that on the community. So once the infrastructure's done, well, then the conversation becomes quite different. And that's a conversation that we have with the community and then present based on that basis. But at the moment, we've been screamed at about infrastructure, and to be honest, we all know how that works out in terms of what it costs us personally, what it costs us in terms of getting around the township, you know, some of the, what we haven't seen in Hawea for quite some time is an actual proper consultation, people actually coming and having a conversation with the community about what's required. 2003 there was a consultation, and that's why we've ended up with the City Road Sergeant's Way, you know, because that was in that consultation, but it's taken that long to come through, and in the meantime there's been houses built on either side of it. So there's been no allowance left. So yes, we talked about a road that we haven't actually put the allowance in the plan to do that. And that's what we're finding with Cemetery Road and Domain Road. Again, there's been no allowance actually left there in terms of approving things. Now, yes, we've got a special housing area down there, we'll deal with that corner later, but nobody has. And so whether or not that can provide affordable housing is another question of time.
Thank you very much. Go back to your point, Mr. White. You say the lake drops, the water stops flowing. I'm aware that basically it drops every winter, because it's a managed lake. How serious is that in terms of the impinging on the water supply?
That's a summer issue. It happens in the summer when the I'm guessing the groundwater falls lower, and then if the lake is used,
yes, it's because it, I know that like a
I've observed the patterns of the latents, and sometimes they draw it down in late summer, depending on what's going on and whether power stations are out of action and all of those things.
We've also seen quite low latents in the last few years. Like last year, it was the first year we had the lake actually come up to the levels that we'd normally expect.
Yeah.
The previous years prior to that, I think we were probably looking at 2011 before we had the lake up at that level. You can probably check the lake details, there's a somewhere a piece of record of it. But the lake, for the first time last year, had been running at a high level. I think they were even talking about flooding a little bit.
Yes, because it was a major flow. From a safe distance. But it's the effect of the combination of low lake levels and air in summer that's the issue.
It's not just farmers' pools that dry up, it's actually residential houses that actually have pools that go dry as well.
The town water supply is a bore that's on the lakefront. And I don't know the specifics of that, the depth of that, but I'm just highlighting that we're getting to a point where there's a tension with the amount of water, and with contemplating such a large increase, it may become more of an issue.
Mr. Dawson?
Yeah, thank you. You say that there hasn't been any sort of broad consultation for a long time with the community about the sort of scale and longer-term future of the town. But you also talked about getting your mandate from the community. I'm sort of interested in how you do that. How do you interface with the community sort of on a more regular basis than perhaps the council as a whole does to find out what the community thinks about infrastructure or current
proposals
for growth or
anything that's happening? We had 3 public meetings a year, which we've actually, this one, so we had one in January, one in May, and one in October. So we're sort of trying to communicate in that way. We have some new processes actually that are being developed at the moment with the website and communication, but sadly we're also down a secretary at the moment. So that's something that's actually happening at this stage.
So you have your own website?
Yes. But that's still in development. In terms of how we communicate with people at this point, that's still in development. But that has been in response to basically suggestions that we are not up to speed and up to date with what the community actually wants. And so therefore, how can we actually submit on behalf of the community if we don't actually know what they want? So that website and that information has been designed so that we can actually communicate with the community more regularly and more effectively and efficiently fast. So we can actually respond back to council information. Because council, when they send out submissions, you pretty much have a month to write it up. And yeah, that's not very much time if you're trying to get hold of it.
No, it won't fit in with your public meeting schedule.
No, exactly. I mean, if you could just reschedule that, that'd be great. But in the meantime, we are looking at this website as actually a way to increase our communication with people. At the moment, we're relying on emails, communication coming through. Errol Carr, who's one of the local residents and one of the treasurers has a newsletter that goes out weekly, if not more regularly, so we get information out on that. So as a community, we're quite connected. We also have social media sites. So we've got people monitoring all sorts of different areas to try and get information coming through, and we throw everything out to the public meetings.
And public meetings are very well attended, and that guides us and gives us a very clear indication of what the community wants.
And I noticed like the January one, that will capture people that are holidaying, I guess, so that's quite specifically at that time of year to do that.
And we do get quite a few people that have holiday houses in the area that come to that particular meeting. There's quite a few that actually came up and introduced themselves at the end, which was quite nice. So we try and actually keep these people as included as we can. But also, most of them are aware of the local newsletter as well. So, you know, so they go onto that and they get it sent out everywhere.
Electronically?
Yes.
So that's available for people who don't live there.
Yes.
Thank you. My next question, you talked about carrying over some of this, the township rules, I think it is, and you mentioned the one about boundary planting, which I've managed to find. But I wasn't clear whether you just used that as an example, or whether it's because, sorry, I haven't gone back to your main submission, but are there other rules that in the township that are really specific that you're wanting to carry over?
There were. In the current township rules, there were some tree species that are not in the wider district rules. I think it's page number 10 of our submission. I listed the ones that were not already in the wider district chapter, and I crossed out the ones that are. Heavy vehicle storage, being that it seems unclear as to whether we're going to have any industrial zoning. It's not really a township, but it lends itself to that, particularly with the foot on the road. There was one on boarding and keeping of animals. And I accept Ms. Bowbier's evidence in relation to the noise rule. That one could be.
Alright, thank you. And then just so that I understand how some of the eroding works, when you talk about Cemetery Road, Delaney Road being a bypass for heavy trucks, and you talk about when the Luggett Bridge is closed, you'll say the West Coast Road is closed. Am I right in thinking that, say, it was a milk truck coming from the West Coast, it would come down the West Coast Road, across the dam, down the main road, along the Cemetery Road, down to the Luggett Bridge, and either go east, north or south, depending on which direction they were heading?
They originate from Canterbury and the south from Dairy Factory.
Yes, one.
And then they're coming.
So rather than going all the way up to Albertown and across that bridge, they'll come around.
They're coming through from Terrace Direction. They've really got to come through to cross over the by the buildings Harwear or
Albertown.
Because Albertown, you've got to go to Luggett.
You've got to go anyway. Yeah.
I think they avoid Albertown turnoff because it's such a crash problem spot.
That's
and they have long vehicles, and it's easier for them to stay on the back roads.
But that means they come up Gladstone, along the cemetery, round the main, then through that section onto the dam.
Or vice versa, Domain straight down. So they might just actually turn off Gladstone onto Domain.
Because I've never been on that road. But Domain Road comes off Gladstone, goes all the way on past the Domain, and then it does actually come all the way up to the dam, just that it's not sealed. And they use that as well.
If GPS tells them that's a good way to go, they go.
Yeah.
Or they might know it. I don't know how much knowledge they have of those roads and that sort of hit them, but I know a lot of them do it by GPS and maps.
And then you mentioned another intersection, so I'm sorry to be ignorant of that as well, but happily have Lakeview Terrace intersection, which hasn't been discussed, which is quite right. Where is that?
So, we have a township. Where the business area that they're proposing, you'll see the group of pine trees and the,
Pebble is coming all the way down through,
Yes.
Yeah.
And where it changes, I probably can't reach Callum, but, further to the right.
Oh, I see what you mean.
That section there is going to become a major issue. You can see how it's really tight turning.
Yes, I know.
And it's almost blind and you come over a hill.
Yeah, I'm completely aware of it, yes. And that you would, at the moment, it's just a sort of, has been, up to a residential area. But it's going to become a link.
It's going to be the main access route for recreational opportunities for the special housing area. It's going to go straight up through the middle to get to the lake. Yeah. So every evening, in the summer, almost the whole town goes to the beach, and they'll be taking that route and using that intersection, which hasn't been.
The only alternative is the side of the way, which is
just currently being used as the through there. Is that the one through the, to the...
So you go up the, through Sentinel Park, which is just to the right of the trees?
Sentinel Park, which is...
And you can see there's a roundabout route, but that's how you can get through in the middle of the...
The people started to use that.
They're using it. You've got houses being built on there. The line of sight's are terrible. It's very narrow. It was never actually, originally when it was, when that development was planned, it was never planned as a through road. That came later. And was presumably allowed because it was in the 2003 consultation document.
And we've had committee members go and park two four-wheel drives on that road and you can't put them next to each other.
So that's the capital. And that's all for me. Thank you.
Yes. A couple of points. First, I thank you for what you do. I'd happily say that this is for the benefit of the fellow commissioners. The question you served is that. Are we a community that is easily probably the most connected community in the district? And we include all the community associations in there. Your voice is heard, and I try and get along to those town meetings as often as I can. You know, I'm running out of space in my back, unfortunately. That would be good. Just a couple of questions. You mentioned the bores and the impact on the lake. Well, you'd be aware there are guidelines that are about the maximum height, maximum load, and that's directly related to contact and what it can release. So what you extract is minute compared to what contact is releasing on a daily basis. So the impact, and I'm just trying to get my head around the issue we've got with the scale of development, because the impact on the aquifer is more to do, and I just want to make sure I'm just okay on this, with that than it is with the development of the drinking water. Does that make sense, or do you understand, or do you, trying to get that? Am I wrong in that assumption? The rise and fall of the lake, which affects, and that's absolutely true, it does affect, but that has more to do with contact than it has to do with water extraction from drinking water. Would that be a fair assumption?
I think the rising and falling, from what I understand, the rising and falling of the lake and the effect it has on the pool is more of an issue for people on the flat. And so they back their bores go dry. So they've had several people.
And in general, it's the older bores?
My understanding of that particular area, and it's not 100%, is that there's two pockets of water there, two tables you've got there. So one you can go down to something like 15, 16 metres and you'll hit it. But beyond that, once that goes dry, you then have to go down further, like another 20 metres to hit the next bumper. So yes, the ones that are actually more shallow are going dry when the lake goes low. And what they're doing is they're blaming the farmers for that. They're taking all of the water and using that, so there's nothing left in their equipment to actually take the drinking water. So that's an issue there. From the actual town perspective, I'm not about how the water things actually work. All I know is that I've never been comfortable with council water, so I'm on my own supply.
The final regime in our year has changed massively. That'd be fair to say, you alluded to the final tape from the boys' building. When I first arrived in this district in my first 2 months was camping at Harvey Flat in June, which just proves my Scottish heritage, but it was a different place. It was very small scale, there was no headaches.
Yeah, it's very, very fun there for starters, as opposed to sheep. So it's So the use of farming in the area has changed as well, and that's put a different pressures on the water because we're using more water as a dairy farm than we would as a sheep farm or as a crop farm.
Tell me if your points about the urban growth boundary. I have to be very careful here because that urban growth boundary was established at the initial stage of the human process. Since then, the process has moved on, and we now are where we are, we've been told that that urban growth boundary has been, the horse has bolted. So, if you look at the street development, which was one side of Century Road, the SHA development, which is, no other opinions about that, but that is consented, so that's going to end. So now that that development is crossing Century Road, the urban growth boundary has not as much weight as potentially it once had. So it's progressing, and Universal have suggested their outline for an urban growth boundary. You've talked about rural residential. Is your vision of that inside that urban growth boundary so that you transfer, or is it, so for example, you mentioned the waterways. So if we looked at from the waterways to the edge of the trees, which Universal would propose investing, is that what you're looking at as a transition, or is it inside the waterways?
Well, if the UGB was at the waterways, it's clear from the market economic study and the fact that special housing area, but for the next planning cycle there is enough capacity well beyond what's needed. So with the township and the SHA, I can't really see the problem in on the southern below the SHA having rural residential.
The reality is the township, the community space is saying that they want the urban growth boundary to stay where it is. Special housing area obviously muddies the water a little bit, and we accept that, and we accept that it's consented, but we actually want that to be in its own separate zoning. We don't want the urban growth boundary to actually come up around it. The streets development, different question entirely, but that goes over the water race. That actually extends over the water race, is my understanding. So to say how long before we have a conversation about whether or not the water race is actually an acceptable boundary, because it's already been breached, that's gone. Gone with the horses are bolted. So where do we stop this conversation? And I think that's really what we're actually asking at this stage. We want to keep the urban growth boundary, which was confirmed 2 months before the special housing area was approved, in the same place as Century Road. We want that to actually stay there. And if the special housing area has to go ahead, then that can be in its own special zone. That's how we feel about it as a community. And so I guess if you wanted to have a look at that kind of residential zoning around that, again, that's something we need to go back and ask the community about. We can't just answer that here.
Because you'll be aware of the St. John's Place, is it Wycombe Ave?
St. John's Place.
For the benefit of the commissioners, that's this area here. And that was very much a large lot that was. How does the Aoi Community Association feel about that as a potential or as a planning outcome? Because now that's got its own.
If and when the residents of those particular areas want to do something about it, then we're more than happy to have that conversation and support them to do what they want to do. That's an if and when conversation. That's not a conversation that we're having at the moment because nobody's brought it up. Yes, it's outside of the urban growth boundary at this stage. I can't imagine.
Is it?
Right. Okay. Well, in that case, that comes down to residents there to decide what they do. What we're trying to do as a community is try and limit our footprint on the landscape and keep control of that infrastructure.
And I get that. I do understand that. But the where we are there is what we've described here with this these outcomes, like this is all inside the growth boundary,
yeah.
And we have issues because the roadings, and here, like these two roads don't connect because these are private lots, and so yeah. It's not.
So maybe there's a conversation that the community should have about the best way of connecting that up, because that's what hasn't been done on the other side of it. We've not had the conversations or made sure that we've actually like left allowances for those roads to go in place. My understanding from the emergency services is that having all these roads that don't connect is a problem. So they had a fire at one point in between Lycan Lane and St John Place, and they had to drive all the way around to actually get to the access points, even though it was not very far away. So again, that's sort of something that I think as a community and council should have a conversation to talk about how to best address that as we go forward.
And what else? I'm trying. So what?
And also, those are two private roads.
Yeah.
So it would have to be a discussion with the people who live in St John Place and Lycan Lane.
And what I'm trying to drive to is that subdivision was a large lot residential subdivision that was developed and approved at the time, go through the conditions, which hasn't ended up with great outcomes. So
what do you mean hasn't ended up?
Well, my understanding was that that was unsealed, this was unsealed, and if they were joined, they'd have to be sealed, curved and channeled, so the developer took the low-cost option.
Right, so they are sealed now?
Yep, because they've got more houses off them, but...
And they were large lots, they were 4,000.
Yes.
But now
you can
supply.
Yes.
Half
open. Exactly. I think their original rule were essential, and they were rezoned large lot in the stage one proposed plan process.
There was a submission in the original submissions from one of the owners on Grandview for a reduction in the for subdivision. And the council came back and said that there was no infrastructure to that would service that road. So on the one hand, there's no infrastructure inside the urban growth boundary, and then we're talking about trying to provide infrastructure for the special housing area. So
to me, Caleb, it sounds like they haven't been developed to the point that they've been subdivided further because there's no infrastructure.
I get you.
I'm actually the infrastructure question is infrastructure is a bit of engineers and buildings and so on. So the infrastructure question is a constant frustration because of this thing called growth, and we're a district that's a high growth district, and I'm keen to. But, and that's a question I was going to ask you, was you mentioned how we were coming the third largest urban area in the QLDC. I thought it really was. Because it's just almost the nature of, if you look at the likes of Tim's Field, when I got here, that was a mill. And it had, it was almost an industrial area, which is now Tim's Field. And the latest section that came to market sold out in the morning. There was 21 sections, and around about 300 to 400. So and I'm not trying to argue the case for it, but everywhere seems to be growing like topsy. And how would you address? How would the HCA look to address not? How do you address that pressure on?
Well, when you look at Tim's Field and how much is there compared to before Tim's Field was there, we have taken our share of the growth, and this is far beyond what the university were talking about yesterday is far more than our share of the growth. And if perhaps the council hadn't sold the land that Mr. Hawkins had provided with MICA, it could have been used for affordable housing in the location that it was needed.
And I think the other thing that you sort of mentioned there is that you sort of said that an engineer can answer most questions and they can solve all the problems, and I agree with that. But where's the money? Because that's what we keep getting slammed time and time again. We make requests for infrastructure and we come back and say, no, sorry, we can't can't do that, we haven't got the budget, we haven't got the budget, we haven't got the budget. So that's the constant mantra that we're actually hearing in Hawea at the moment, we don't have the budget. So I guess the infrastructure at this point is like, yes, an engineer could probably solve a number of those issues that we've actually got going on, but how much would it cost and where would the money come from? And that's the big issue at the end of the day, because it comes back to the ratepayer at the end of the day as to where that money comes from. And we've already seen massive increases in our rates, so how much further do we need to go with this before we get some sort of support?
I'll take you to, if we are looking at the two intersections, the Century Road intersection and the Down intersection, and we've got engineers, running engineers saying we can solve these problems, and I understand they are issues, but you've got a qualified engineer telling us that we can solve the problems. Is Mr. Carr wrong?
Well, it's not, I don't think it's as simple as I said, especially I don't think it's as simple as having enough space. The council doesn't own the land, and they have to meet, say, for the roundabout. We're going to have to meet complex conditions for any work to happen there. When I spoke to the, when I went to the council has moved, but I talked about just recently the council's had a plan out with councillor Shaw, and it was the same roading engineer that did the intersection with the state highway. The road running up the left hand side of the lake, and he said just getting the floodlight over that intersection took 6 months, and to get contacts approval just to dig a hole that was, I forget how, it wasn't that deep, but I suspect that the dam is not in the highest best condition.
Please don't tell them that.
and they are extremely concerned about it.
Which just raises the question as to whether or not long-term planning-wise, is that the best actually route in and out? Is there another route developed down through the flat? I don't know. These are questions that so other people need to sit down and have a look at and work out from the capacity side of things, but certainly what we've got happening in Hawea at the moment is a disaster waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm. I've got a question. We heard from the university yesterday that there was a shortage of industrial space in Hawea, so they're looking at providing 72 sections potentially. How does that irrespective? I mean, I think it's universal. Now, let's say it was potential industrial sections, it's just a shortage of the availability for that sort of development. Is that something that the HCA has an opinion on?
I honestly think that the tradespeople out there would probably welcome something like that. Whether or not that would be the right location is an entirely different question, and one that should be taken out of the community.
I guess the issue is in its current location as proposed. You've got the major school bike path running straight past the entrance to it. And two, that the main road is an unsealed road. We already have accidents on it. And to receive that type of industrial treatment, that road would have to have a fairing channel and seal.
And sort of pretty solid plans for stormwater runoff and stuff like that as well.
That brings me rather neatly to the discussion about the potential school and the potential local shopping zone.
So just on the school side of things, I had a conversation with the new principal down at the Hawea Flat School last week or the week before, and I asked her, I said, how much consultation has taken place with the school regarding the development in Hawea? And she went, oh, nothing really. And I said, well, what do you know about the special housing area? What special housing area? Now, I appreciate the special housing area has been a big topic here for quite some time, but one would assume with the principal being in the school for 6 months at that stage, and lots of development going on at the school, that some sort of conversations would have actually happened and she would have been aware in some way. So what she's aware of is that no conversations have taken place in terms of what they're doing with regards to the Ministry of Education. So she's got no idea what's happening there. There's talk about a school there, but nobody's actually spoken to the school, the existing school, about what that might mean for them and how they plan about that going forward for the next 30 years.
The shopping zone, it will have an effect on the evidence yesterday, was that it wouldn't. But after, if you've got a large supermarket on the southern side of Cemetery Road, it's going to suck away from our current shop.
To be honest, the community can't be buying it, but again, we'd have to ask them.
Karen, can I just come back to your comment? I read, and I'll just quote it, that Michael Smith from Poole, GC, states that the Domain Road, Cattleland, Harvey Control Structure Road is fraught with issues. These include expensive design and construction costs associated with building alongside power station, canal and lake frontage. So I'm only quoting him because if we are saying that the constraints of infrastructure is why we are not happy about changing the EGD or rezoning, if an engineer said, oh yes, it can all be dealt with, but Michael Smith from Poole is saying it's fraught with issues.
Yeah, and that's very well quoted in the survey. And I take that point. The one I'll give you one is that the last sentence between the tension between the older and younger generation is significant. Is that the ridge, the front of the ridge, viewing to the lake versus the back of the lake? Would that be a...
I found that tension to be around the fact that young people are struggling to find affordable housing. Yeah. So that was one of the things that the special housing areas, that they wanted the special housing area to go ahead because it would be affordable housing. Whereas the older generation, but it's not going to be affordable housing because they've got this issue, that issue, this issue. You know, it's all going to add up, and if that is going to actually come up on the cost of the housing. So it's not going to be affordable housing. $650,000 is not affordable housing. Sorry, it's not.
Okay. That's all for me, sir. Well, thank you very much for providing your take. Very much appreciate it. And
thank you
for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.